Hello, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Sean and it is Wednesday, August 10th, 2016. And I'm so glad to welcome you to episode number 12 of Beyond the Ring with Big T Wrestling Podcast. Tonight on the show, as always, we will provide you with in-depth and detailed SmackDown and Raw results and reactions coming up next on the show. As well as every week, we are going to give you some juicy, deep WWE news and rumors all here tonight for you on the show. And in a special treat tonight, we have a SummerSlam rewind. Yes, me and Big T will be going over some of our favorite SummerSlam moments of all time up here tonight on Beyond the Ring with Big T Wrestling Podcast. And now, the moment you've waited for, live from Cleveland, Ohio, the host of the show, Big T.
Thank you very much, Sean, for the introduction, as always, and hello, everybody. Welcome to a brand new episode of the Beyond the Ring with Big T Wrestling Podcast. It's a pleasure to have you all here right now on the show tonight, and I hope you all had a great week. I hope you're all enjoying the Olympic Games, because the Olympic Games, let's be honest, is the only thing that has been good so far this week. Now, let me explain why. The WWE to me this week, okay, and I'm going to give you reasons why coming up in our Raw and SmackDown reviews and stuff coming up. But I'm going to tell you guys right off the bat that if you missed Raw and SmackDown this week, if you guys missed the shows, you'd miss anything at all. Nothing. Absolutely nothing that, you know, is newsworthy. Nothing that is really important. This was one of the biggest wasteful weeks in the WWE and one of the worst weeks for wrestling action and just the entertainment part, even with television in WWE history, that I've seen ever since I've been a fan. Now, let me explain something. As I've said, I've been watching wrestling for over 20 years throughout the 90s because, you know, I was a little kid. I always loved it. And I would always watch it whenever my dad would have it on TV. But as far as, you know, when I reached the age of, well, 2 weeks before my 12th birthday, and I had my own TV in my room, you know, and all that stuff, flipping through the channels, and I found Raw on February 7th of 2000. And ever since then, when I had my own TV in my room and, you know, channel surfing, and I found wrestling, because I always loved it throughout the 90s, but then I found it again in 2000, and having my own TV made it all the better. So then, from February 7th of 2000 all the way till now, excuse me, watched every episode of Raw, every episode of SmackDown. I have not missed a Raw or a SmackDown show since February 7th of 2000. I've watched them all religiously. And in the 16 and a half years that I've been watching this product religiously, oh, mind I tell you too, in that 16 and a half year span, not only have I never missed a Raw and SmackDown show, but I've never missed a pay-per-view. I have seen every pay-per-view for 16 and a half years. And this was probably the single worst week of Raw and SmackDown that I have seen in my 16 and a half years of watching the WWE product. This Raw show stood toe-to-toe with the 4th of July episode, and I'll tell you one thing, the SmackDown show is by far the worst SmackDown of the live era, the SmackDown live era. You know, we thought the first episode after the draft of SmackDown was bad. This trumps that tenfold. And it's going to be interesting. I'm going to look in the news and rumors portion of the show to see if there's ratings for Raw and SmackDown out. Because SmackDown in the first week after the draft got a 1.92 rating. Then last week's SmackDown, which was actually a pretty good SmackDown because it told the story. It was built around Dolph Ziggler making sure that he's going to prove to everybody that he belongs, which is a great show. And believe it or not, that show got a 1.86. So I'm thinking this week's SmackDown, with as bad as it was, this has got to pull in the 1.7 or 1.6 range, maybe even 1.5, dare I say, low enough. And Raw, I think Raw is going to suffer a huge drop off because they did not do anything to generate anything excitement. They didn't do anything to generate any interest for people to be like, oh, you know, I need to stay tuned in this week. It was just one of the worst piss poor booking weeks. I even heard rumors that the script for Raw did not get finalized till 7:59 p.m., 1 minute before it hit air. If you can believe that. And if that happened, we all know who had everything to do with that. Of course it would be Mr. Vince McMahon. But anyway, I mean, so if you guys missed anything, you did not. You know, you really didn't miss anything. Honestly, you should be glad you missed it. I watch it because I love it, and I will always watch wrestling no matter how good or bad it is. And another reason why I have to watch all the shows, too, is because I have a responsibility here as a host to, you know, keep you guys informed with what's going on, and this was just some of the worst entertainment aspect and some of the worst in-ring action that I've ever seen in, you know, over 20 years of watching the sport of professional wrestling. And that is my thought for you. Get digging into these Raw and SmackDown reviews. It was just a terrible week this week.
Man. Well, I guess I could be happy that I'm probably part of the majority of the world that did not see these episodes this week. I forgot to push record not once but twice this week, so my loss, but maybe not so much after all. But let's dig into the details here. Uproxx.com, Bill Hanstock reports the Raw results for August 8th, 2016. Chris Jericho defeated Enzo Amore. Braun Strowman defeated Joel Jarrell Nelson. Darren Young defeated Titus O'Neil. Seth Rollins cut an in-ring promo running down Finn Balor. By the way, I don't know if Big T knew this, but there are tickets available on StubHub, so you could meet Seth Rollins at SummerSlam, as well as Dean Ambrose, Roman Reigns, Charlotte, Sasha Banks. All of your favorite superstars have meet and greets, VIP packages at SummerSlam. So a little bit of a commercial there, but hopefully someone picks that up and enjoys it, and let us know if you do. But back to Raw's action. Cesaro defeated Sheamus. Man. Unbelievable. Neville and Sin Cara defeated the Dudley Boys. Newlyweds Rusev and Lana had an in-ring celebration of love. However, it was interrupted by Roman Reigns. Things broke down into a brawl and Lana falling into a delicious wedding cake. Sasha Banks defeated Dana Brooke. Luke Gallows defeated Kofi Kingston. And Daniel Bryan and Mick Foley bickered about Randy Orton and Brock Lesnar and their respective shows. Rusev came out to suck up to Mick Foley, but Cesaro interrupted, saying he deserves a championship opportunity. Foley makes a United States Championship match between Rusev and Cesaro as the main event, with the winner facing Roman Reigns at SummerSlam. How nice is that? Roman Reigns' number one contendership is, it's almost like Roman's already the U.S. champion. Like, why does Rusev have to defend his championship instead of Roman defending his number one contendership?
Yeah, I mean, that's really exactly how I feel, too.
Like, it's almost like Rusev being the champion doesn't amount to Rusev having the honor of facing Roman Reigns.
Exactly.
Like, now, why is Roman even going for the championship if it's so beneath him, if he's so important?
Well, it's probably because of punishment, but then again, it's like, really is it punishment because he's still going for a title. And, you know, please leave those match results up, Sean, so you can refresh me. By the way, I heard just a little bit of echo coming through on your side, just so you know. but, anyway. To go with the first three matches.
Well, real quick, I didn't finish the last match here. The United States Championship match, Rusev versus, Cesaro. Rusev defeated Cesaro to retain his championship after Sheamus came down and he, cheated behind the referee's back, and Roman Reigns speared Rusev after the match and left him laying. And that concludes Monday Night Raw results for August 8th, 2016, live from somewhere or another.
It was from the Honda Center in Anaheim, California.
That's right.
But, you know,
just give us your general overview. I mean, it's pretty cut and dry.
Yeah, I'm going to give you my general overview of each section, you know, pretty quickly. Like, all right, the first three matches. With Jericho and Enzo Amore, that ended in DQ. And thank God. Then we had Titus. That went 11 minutes. Keep in mind, that first match went 11 minutes. Then we moved on to Braun Strowman and Jarrell Nelson, or whatever his name is. That match went 1 minute. And I got to tell you that Braun Strowman's backwards chokeslam is probably the sloppiest fucking finishing move I've ever seen in my life. The execution was just so sloppy, especially on Monday. And it's such an unrealistic move. It's like, yeah, that's a move you can give to jobbers, but let's see you try to pull that off on somebody that weighs, like, maybe John Cena's weight or The Undertaker's weight or even heavier. It ain't gonna happen. Braun Strowman, that finishing move is probably the worst finishing move I've ever seen. It's probably even worse than the Kali chop and the Kali bomb that the Great Kali used. And Braun Strowman, I don't see him being in the swing of things for more than 1 to 2 years in the WWE. He's going to be out. He's going to be a flash in the pan. But keep in mind, that match went 1 minute. So you got two matches so far in the night, 12 minutes worth of wrestling. Then you move on to Darren Young and Titus O'Neil. This is 50-50 booking at its absolute worst. What did we get last week? Darren Young beats Titus O'Neil by grabbing the tights. Or no, Titus O'Neil beat Darren Young by grabbing the tights. Okay, so now this week, what do we get? We get Darren Young beating Titus O'Neil by grabbing the tights. 50-50 booking at its absolute worst. Same finish. And let me tell you, the match only went 2 minutes. And that was your 9 o'clock hour, your 8 o'clock hour, ladies and gentlemen. So the whole first hour of Raw, hour one, basically shitty matches that didn't mean much. And you only had 14 minutes of in-ring action in 1 hour. That the other 46 minutes of that first hour was just, I keep hearing myself echo.
I'm not hearing anything. Now I'm hearing myself echo.
Yeah, I was going to say, now I hear you. All right, there we go. I think we're okay now.
Hello.
But it sounded okay, I think, there on my end.
A little echo.
Just a little something. Maybe I could try to switch my mics if,
okay.
I'll go forward with this though for now. That left you 46 minutes of in-ring action in the first hour. Which, I mean, 46 minutes of garbage. only 14 minutes of in-ring action in the first hour. The other 46 minutes were commercials, backstage promos, all things of that sort. Then you move on to, you know, the Seth Rollins promo, which was great. The only good things that happened were no in-ring, you know, nothing that involved in-ring action. Seth Rollins cut a great promo talking about Finn Balor being the, I forget, it was something warrior is what Finn means, and then Balor is the Demon King, and then Balor wants to call out the Demon King next week. Rollins wants to call out the Demon King next week. So that should be fun. So great promo by Seth Rollins. Then you get the Rusev wedding. It was one of the worst and most pointless wedding segments in the history of the WWE, because we all knew what was coming, at least I did. I seen it coming a mile away, that Roman Reigns was going to come out and stick his nose where it doesn't belong. And of course he did. And he went on to crack the worst jokes and cut the cheesiest fucking promo. And culminated with Roman Reigns saying, he's like, he challenged Rusev for the U.S. title at SummerSlam. Then Rusev said no. And then Roman Reigns is like, well, I'm really surprised at you, Rusev. You know, he's like, but, you know, he's like, I expected more from you, Rusev. I'm really disappointed in you. I expected more from you. He's like, just like Lana expected more from you on your wedding night. And then this led out to a big time brawl. You know, then they're fighting in the corner. Roman Reigns hits Rusev. Rusev goes flying back into Lana. Then Lana just lands face first into the cake. The whole front of her is covered because there were like three wedding cakes. Lana went into one of them. And Roman Reigns, just when he talks, it's so damn scripted. It really is. It's like the most scripted shit in the world. And in what reason? Because alcohol is a banned substance in the WWE wellness policy. And they had Roman Reigns on the air. I don't know what was in the bottle. I'm hoping it really wasn't champagne. But if it really was, why in the fuck did WWE have a wellness policy offender violating the wellness policy on TV by drinking champagne? So that's another one. But another, you know, nothing good segment. Not at all. And then we move on. And, you know, Rusev's backstage freaking out. Mick Foley says that, you know, he's going to defend his title against Roman Reigns at SummerSlam in the U.S. title match. So then Rusev's real upset. Then what other matches do we have, Sean? Is the Sasha Banks one next?
I'm not sure. I'm on the SmackDown results now. I'm still here. You're in a bit of an echo. Everything I'm saying.
Me too. I'm hearing it on myself. But I know we had the Dana Brooke-Sasha Banks match. What doesn't make sense there is that Sasha Banks went to Mick Foley earlier in the night, and she said that she wants Charlotte and Dana Brooke in a handicap match at SummerSlam for the women's title. So what, now champions got to make it harder on themselves, I guess? But, you know, that didn't make any sense. And then what does Mick Foley do? Mick Foley says, well, I'm going to have you fight Dana Brooke tonight, Sasha. So great, we see Sasha and Dana Brooke again. Why? And then Mick Foley says, well, if you beat Dana Brooke, then Dana Brooke is banned from ringside with your match with Charlotte at SummerSlam. But, okay, wouldn't that mean then that Sasha would just lay down and let Dana Brooke beat her, so then it would be a handicap match at SummerSlam, just like she was just requesting when she walked into Mick Foley's fucking office? But no, she goes out there and beats Dana Brooke in under 2 minutes and makes it a singles match with just her and Charlotte with Dana Brooke banned from ringside after Sasha Banks was telling Mick Foley she wanted the handicap match at SummerSlam. Total lack of logic in WWE's part. This goes to show you just how fucked up that they really are. They cannot get things straight. They can't. They just can't. You know, Dudley Boys going up against Neville and Sin Cara. D-Von gets the Red Arrow. The Bubba Ray's looking at D-Von in disgust, like, you know, huh, you lost. Like, you know, just maybe now they're finally going to split the Dudley Boys up and make Bubba, you know, like a monster heel. I don't know. But, you know, then we move on from that. The other matches that probably happened are just so unforgettable. Finn Balor came out and cut an awesome promo. He didn't come out to the ring, but he was on the Titantron, and he cut an awesome promo. You know, so that was great. Hype up for the match. Then you had the club, Anderson and Gallows, talk about ring postitis, about Big E. Then you had Carl Anderson holding a jar filled with water that was supposed to be Big E's balls. They were wearing doctor's coats, acting like doctors. So, I mean, that right there was kind of funny. But then you got Gallows and Kingston, and then Gallows beats Kingston in about a minute and a half. Nothing there again. Cesaro and Sheamus, they put on a decent match, yes, but we've seen it so many times already. Who cares? Nobody cares. They really don't. And then you had Mick Foley and Daniel Bryan in the ring basically stroking each other's egos and getting down on their knees and sucking each other's cocks, so to speak. Oh, you know, I'm sorry, Daniel, that Brock Lesnar invaded SmackDown. And Daniel, oh, I'm sorry, Mick, that Randy Orton invaded Raw. But, you know, blah, blah, blah about SmackDown, blah, blah, blah about Raw. And they're doing competition. And Daniel Bryan talking about any respects to Mick Foley. Mick Foley telling him, no, you don't. I gotta change my mic because I'm echoing like crazy. But, you know, basically going back and forth, trying to do competition or one-up each other, so to speak, and it didn't work. It was just poorly done. It was stupid. There was no sense in even having there. I mean, having Daniel Bryan there because it led to nothing. And then with Rusev coming out and having that whole thing, of course, Sheamus interfered, bro kicked Cesaro when the ref was down. You know, Rusev super kicked Cesaro, the title got retained, and that was it. For me, Raw got a big old 1 out of 10. It was an absolute fucking embarrassment, and they get a big old 1.
Whoa. All right, bud. I don't know if you switched your mic yet or not.
No, I gotta do that right now, so,
Alright, I'm gonna head on and read the SmackDown results. WWE SmackDown Live results for August 9th, 2016, provided again by Bill Hanstock of uproxx.com. That's uproxx.com. Here are your quick and dirty SmackDown Live results. American Alpha defeated Mikey O'Shea and Mike Vega in a tag team match. Becky Lynch versus Eva Marie. The match was set to start, but Eva Marie had a wardrobe malfunction and the bout was unable to take place. Becky Lynch was livid after the match was waved off and challenged anyone in the back to come forward and fight her. Alexa Bliss answered the challenge, but I don't know if you guys know this, but I just read on WWE.com that after Eva Marie's wardrobe malfunction, a controversial hashtag pray for Eva started to gain steam on social media. So WWE fans are falling right into the wicked plans of the WWE and giving Eva all this attention. Shame, shame, shame. It's exactly what they want, people. The more you talk, whether it's good or bad, the more they're going to push her right down your throat. And this hashtag pray for Eva, you need to give me a fucking break with that.
Yeah, big time.
Alexa Bliss then defeated Becky Lynch. Wow. And we have Randy Orton who defeated Alberto Del Rio. Rhino defeated Heath Slater. Carmella defeated Natalya. And in the main event for Tuesday Night SmackDown Live, Dolph Ziggler and Dean Ambrose defeated Bray Wyatt and his Wyatt family brother, Eric Rowan. So, Dolph and Dean, SummerSlam opponents tagging up against Bray Wyatt and Eric Rowan. Sort of weird, not the really appropriate way to book a SummerSlam main event by having these guys tag with each other, in my opinion, but I guess they have done it before with the likes of, I think, what was it? Why do I remember Austin and Triple H had the same type of thing? I could be wrong, but
it was Austin and The Undertaker.
There you go. Well, I think it's safe to say Lightning's not going to strike twice there, but there you have it. Your quick and dirty WWE Tuesday SmackDown Live results for August 9th, 2016, provided by Bill Hanstock of uproxx.com, UPROXX.com.
Yep. And you know, I gotta tell you, I don't know, Sean, first off, before I get into this, I don't know if it's something with your microphone or if you're on the computer or what's going on, but every time I talk, I hear myself echoing back.
I have my mic in like always, so I'm not sure. I'm not hearing you echo though. That's the weird thing. You're coming through perfect to me.
See, that's how it happened. Oh, now I can't even. Now when I talk, I'm back.
How about now?
Hello. Yeah.
Maybe I'll mute my mic and see if you still hear it.
Okay. All right. Now, yeah, see, now I don't hear it at all. So it's something going on with the mics. It's weird.
Yeah, that is really weird because, you know, I got my Beats on. I have my headphones in.
And that's what's been going on with me, except the rules were reversed. Like now I know what you mean. I can hear everything back that I'm saying. It's very odd why that happens. I don't know if maybe the mics, if something with the signals and the computers get screwed up. I don't know.
How about now?
All right. Yeah, now it's perfect.
Huh, I unplugged my headset. Sorry about that. I don't know what the heck that was.
Something was just coming through the headset like crazy. I don't know what it is.
Okay.
But it's like now that you, whatever you did right now is perfect. I don't hear a thing. Now the audio's 100% good. So, all right. I'm going to dig into this SmackDown review. Well, first off, we started with, we started with the whole thing with the Wyatt family coming out, Bray Wyatt and Eric Rowan. They had an in-ring segment. Dean Ambrose came out basically telling them, you know, you think I'm stupid. I'm going to get in the ring and get involved in a two-on-one beatdown. And he's like, but you know, Bray, the more I hear you talk, the more I just want to get in the ring and shut you up. And then Dolph Ziggler comes out, walks with a purpose, basically goes past Dean Ambrose, just looking at him. Ziggler gets in the ring, slides in head first, starts going at it with Rowan and Bray, and next thing you know, Ziggler's getting beat down. Ambrose then decides to run in. A whole melee and big ruckus breaks out. Next thing you know, they're all four of the guys just going at it, all of them together. Then Ziggler super kicks Rowan out of the ring. Bray Wyatt has Ambrose and his sister Abigail, you know, to hold the position before he gets ready to drop him. Then, next thing you know, Ziggler sees it. He thinks he's going to save Dean by going for the super kick. He goes for the super kick. Wyatt stands Ambrose up. Ziggler kicks Ambrose right in the side of the head and the temple. Then next thing you know, Ziggler's yelling at Bray Wyatt, like, what did you do? Then he runs at Bray Wyatt. Bray Wyatt gets him right, and Sister Abigail drops him like a bad habit. So that's how that pretty much started off the show. What were the matches again, bud? Because I was trying to fix my audio issue at the time. I'm sorry.
Well, you know, you don't have to go over every match, but, you know, just the most memorable ones, I think. You know, we had American Alpha defeated Mikey O'Shea. Becky Lynch defeated Eva Marie, kind of, and Alexa Bliss defeated Becky Lynch. Randy Orton defeated Alberto Del Rio. Rhino defeated Heath Slater. Carmella defeated Natalya, and Dolph and Dean defeated Bray and Eric.
All right, well, you know, with American Alpha, definitely good showing with them facing local talent. You know, that gives them a good enhancement match. Becky and Eva Marie got turned into Becky and Alexa Bliss because of Eva Marie's so-called wardrobe malfunction. Alexa Bliss ended up getting the victory with the Twisted Bliss after Eva Marie came back out to distract Becky Lynch. And the only thing I'm going to say about Eva Marie, without going on a tangent, is Eva Marie, go fuck yourself, bitch. And moving on past all that, because you know Eva Marie makes me absolutely sick.
Hashtag pray for Eva.
Yeah, I don't know whoever the fuck got that started, please. But, you know, Carmella, Natalya, characters gotta go. Natalya is sinking faster than the Titanic. He is doing horrible work as a heel. It is not believable at all. She tries to do this trash talking to her opponent where none of it comes off serious. I mean, half the time she's in the ring, even though she's trying to put on this mean face, it's like she's smiling through her angered face that she's trying to make. Natty is horrible as a heel. It's got to go. They need to fix that immediately. That needs to be on the forefront. Eva Marie has to go back babyface. They need to get this heel run done with because it's going to destroy her career. What I did like is that Carmella locked Eva Marie into her submission hold. I mean, locked Natty into her submission hold.
You just said Eva Marie has to go back to babyface.
I meant Natty. You know why I'm thinking Eva Marie? Because Carmella made Natty tap, so it's like I'm visualizing Eva Marie tapping to Carmella. Like, yeah. It happened in NXT. But, yeah, Natty, she needs to go back to babyface quick, because this heel run is ruining Natalya at every aspect. She's smiling in the ring. You know, she's not looking like a true heel. She tries to do this trash talk to her opponent that doesn't come off right. So they need to fix it. I don't know what they're going to do or how they're going to do it, but they got to turn Natalya back babyface. This heel run's got to go. I loved Carmella getting the tap out win on Natalya with her finishing submission hold. Thought that was very nice. Orton and Alberto Del Rio, absolute and complete utter waste of time. You know, they went at it for maybe about 10 minutes. Next thing you know, they're fighting outside the ring. Del Rio hits Orton surgically repaired shoulder with a chair. Ends in DQ, then Orton hits the RKO, he's, you know, looking strong, and it's like, I just had it with this Randy Orton looking strong bullshit already. This is a guy that got beat by Kane at WrestleMania 28, and that was actually Kane's last fucking pay-per-view victory back then. It's been almost 5 years since Kane's won a match on pay-per-view, and, you know, Orton was the one to get beat. That's another thing. I can't take Orton seriously, you know, since then. Going against Brock Lesnar. You know, they just need to have Brock Lesnar fucking beat the shit out of Randy Orton and let this be done already. But, you know, they had Randy Orton look strong with an RKO in the end. Another disqualification finish, though, that was basically fucking pointless. Heath Slater and Rhino. Heath Slater tried to approach Rhino and tell him, you know, like, listen, I need this one, man. You know, you already got your contract. Why don't you just lay down, let me get a win. I got two kids at home. Rhino said no. And then Heath Slater started talking about his four kids at home. And then Rhino said, wait a minute, I thought it was two kids. So he caught Heath Slater in a lie. Then they end up having a match. Rhino wins. Then Shane McMahon and Daniel Bryan are in the back holding a contract. Shane McMahon's looking at it. Daniel Bryan's saying that Heath Slater embodies what, you know, SmackDown Live is and what they need. Heath Slater comes in, basically fucking goes ape shit on Shane and Daniel Bryan. Talks about how this is unfair, how, you know, screw them. SmackDown Live is not worthy of seeing Heath Slater ever again. And he just storms out. And they were going to offer him a contract, and Heath Slater didn't give them one moment to even speak. So he blew his contract opportunity there. Good job, Heath Slater. You fucking jobber. Greatest fucking free agent, my ass. It's Kurt Angle. Heath Slater is nothing but a fucking jobber. A jobber. Capital J-O-B-B-E-R. Jobber. That's all he is. That's all he ever will be. He will never be anything else except the fucking Wendy's girl. That's all Heath Slater can ever be, is the Wendy's girl. Just like John Cena said. Now, moving forward.
Yo.
Yeah.
I'm looking at Kane's win-loss record for this year.
Yeah.
Kane defeated Bray Wyatt at 6 house shows in a row back in March and February.
What? Are you kidding me? They couldn't even give Bray Wyatt the live event win?
Kane defeated Bray Wyatt 6 house shows in a row.
Where is the logic in WWE's booking, man? That's like another thing where they don't think. They really don't think. I don't understand. Wow. Huh. Well, thanks for that piece of information, buddy.
Crazy.
I only got the main event tag, or did I miss one?
I guess so. One more.
All right. The main event then, the main event tag with, Ambrose and, you know, Ziggler against Eric Rowan and Bray Wyatt. Fantastic. I said that this match was going to happen a week ago already. Of course it did. And didn't really give me much to be excited about. I mean, yeah. You know, Ambrose Ziggler got the win, right?
Yep.
Because I didn't even remember because it was such a bad show and I was so aggravated last night. But believe me, I did watch it. But they got the win. Afterwards, they're standing. I remember this. They're standing next to each other in the ring. Then Ambrose grabs Ziggler, gives him a dirty deeds, and that's how the show goes off the air. You know, I got pissed with Ambrose. I love Dean Ambrose, but my heart is with Dolph Ziggler. My heart and soul is with Dolph Ziggler in this match at SummerSlam, and I hope to God that WWE does the right thing by Dolph Ziggler and gives him this damn title. But as far as SmackDown goes, like I said in the opening monologue, and now you can see why when I pulled out this whole review for you, this was the worst SmackDown Live in the SmackDown Live era. You know, this is just absolutely uncalled for. This should not be happening. And SmackDown, they deserve ratings in the ones for this. This was fucking horrible. Horrible this week. And You know, they were no better than Raw. In fact, they were probably just as bad as Raw, maybe a little worse, but, you know, like I said, I wish I had zeros that I could hand out this week, but unfortunately my rating scale is 1 to 10, and like, Raw got a big old 1. SmackDown's right there in the same boat beside it with a big old 1. That's what SmackDown Live gets, a 1, because that's all they deserve. As far as WWE's weekly content, that's all they got this week is a 1. They are at a total loss from getting 10s and 9s 2 weeks ago to getting 1s this week from me. This was an absolute fucking embarrassment what the WWE gave to us this week, and they really better step it up. It's almost like they forgot that they have SummerSlam in 2 weeks. Like, they forgot they have a pay-per-view to build towards. They forgot that their second biggest pay-per-view of the fucking year is right around the bend. And it's like they didn't care. They did not care whatsoever. And it was fucking shameful. Absolutely shameful. And this message is for you. If you could look yourself in the mirror and say that you are happy with the way your show's turned out this week, then you need to go straight to a neurologist because you have a fucking serious brain issue or brain damage going on in your head, Vince, if you believe that your shows were good this week, because they were an absolute, total, utter, complete fucking embarrassment. That's what they were. That was Raw and SmackDown this week. An embarrassment to the wrestling community, an embarrassment to the wrestling fans, a complete embarrassment all around, total fucking garbage. You know what? I've seen better episodes of Velocity, I've seen better episodes of Sunday Night Heat, I've seen better episodes of Shotgun Saturday Night. Back in 1996. Or 97, maybe, beginning of 97, we had The Undertaker versus Triple H in a fucking match when Triple H was Hunter Hearst Helmsley. Granted, he wasn't a big star, but we still got a decent match. And that was weekend shows. This is your flagship programming, and you give us fucking shit all week long. 5 hours. 2 days, back to back, Monday and Tuesday, in 5 hours of fucking grade A, low down, one star, piece of fucking shit shows that nobody should have to sit through and pay money for to sit in the crowd. Absolute fucking embarrassment this week. For people that had to pay money to sit there this week. This is totally shameful. And they better step it up. That's what I gotta say.
All right, man. All right, well, up, echo. Echo. All
right, let me try to switch the other mic back, I guess. Now that you fixed with what's going on your side.
Hello, hello. Well, ladies and gentlemen, for my news story of the week, I'm going to talk about Terry Reynolds and Jim Ross. Talk about her Marlena character in the WWE. Talk of Marlena having a fake penis. And Dustin, a.k.a. Goldust, and much more. William Windsor of WrestlingINC.com provides the following breakdown for us here tonight. The source, of course, is the Ross Report. On episode 127 of the Ross Report, good old JR Jim Ross caught up with Terry Reynolds. Among other things, the former Marlena talked about coming up with the Marlena character. Also, Ross made an interesting claim that Marlena was supposed to have a prosthetic penis. With respect to creating the Marlena character for WWE, Terry admitted that she came up with the idea while laying in a tanning bed. When I came up with the character of Marlena, I was laying in the tanning bed in our home in Stockbridge, Georgia. Dustin's on the road. I'm here with their daughter, Dakota, and absolutely loving being a mommy. It's not like I was saying, God, I've never got to get out of this house. I can't do this. I was happier than a pig in poop. But also, I'm a very creative person. And I think that it was very easy for me to stand back and look at something with an overall view and say there's a deficit here, there. There needs that. Okay, this needs the addition of this component or that. And I was doing the same things, Terry added. Marlena was born in that one tanning bed session in my house. And the weekend before that, I had been on at my sister's and she collected these high-end Barbie dolls. And Bob Mackie, who used to design all of Cher's dresses and Carol Burnett's, he designed this Barbie doll, a limited edition, and the Barbie doll's name was Sun Goddess. And that image was the visual that I saw for Milena. And then, of course, I told Vince that I wanted either a glass of wine or a cigar that I enjoyed smoking to be a part of the character, and we decided that the cigar would make more sense, and so it just all came to be. Although Pat Patterson initially informed Terry that WWE was not going to use her idea, a month later they would change course and bring in the She-Devil. A month later, Dustin called me and said, "Where are you? Pack your bags. They want to do your idea." So that's how it came to be, Terry professed. Here's the lovely thing about that character. There was not one thing about that character anybody created other than me. Not one thing about that character. Now, storyline-wise, there were plenty of storylines that were created for that character, but everything about that character, not one of you guys created. And I loved knowing that the inception and the continuation of that character was everything I conceived of in that tanning bed. And according to Ross, there was some talk of including a prosthetic penis with Marlena's costume. I remember having creative meetings, Vince and I, probably Pat, and maybe Bruce Pritchard, and having meetings about various kinds. One meeting, a creative meeting we had about the Marlena character, was that there was a consideration to have the Marlena character have a prosthetic penis, that the penis would be at certain times, depending on what Marlena wore, in a very subtle way, one could detect that there's something going on there that isn't normal. So wow. In addition to these topics, Terry discussed her relationship with the Big Boss Man, getting her start in WCW, and much more. You can use any of these quotes from this article, just make sure you credit the Ross Report with the hashtag to Wrestling INC for the transcriptions. So, Marlena, breaking it down on the Ross Report just the way we like it. Big T, what do you think of that? But real quick, just want to add this in here for you guys. A bit of a bonus story here for me right now. I know we're trying to speed it along here to get to that SummerSlam rewind as soon as possible, but this one is definitely, very relevant. Let me find it.
What do you got, buddy?
Well, there is another WWE Raw brand title confirmed, according to Mark Middleton of WrestlingINC.com. We talked about this months and months ago when the Cruiserweight division was reinstated. I said, we need to have a title. If not, I'm going to be pissed. Luckily for me and for every other WWE fan out there, we are getting our title. And the source is PW Insider Elite. The WWE Universal title won't be the only championship coming to the Raw brand over the next few months, as a new WWE Cruiserweight title has also been confirmed. No word yet on when the title will debut, but PW Insider reports that it has been commissioned and confirmed by
multiple sources as we've noted that the cruiserweight division will be exclusive to the Red brand. This has not been confirmed, but it's possible we will see the new cruiserweight title debut at the live finale of the WWE Cruiserweight Classic on September 14th from Full Sail University in Orlando, Florida. And by the way, you can become a PW Insider Elite member on pwinsider.com. Elite members get access to the hotline reports from their staff, 2 weekly audio shows, a weekly newsletter, and an ad-free version of pwinsider.com. So, breaking news, Cruiserweight Championship is returning to WWE Monday Night Raw. And that's all I have for you guys tonight. Over to you, Big T.
All right. Now, Sean, I have a question for you because I want to get to the SummerSlam part of things as well.
Okay.
One. And I do have a major story. I don't know if possible if you might want to come on Saturday, maybe do like a quick half hour thing if you can, because I would talk about it tonight, but I want to give this the attention that it so truly deserves, and I'm going to give people just the headline for a teaser right now. It's WWE News. There's a big update on the future of The Undertaker and if he will work WrestleMania 33. This is a huge story going around right now.
Well, I won't be able to do a show any later, you know. I gotta be up early on Sunday, so, but I'll definitely be tuning in. I'll share it on Facebook, share it on Twitter, whatever you, whatever could be imagined. And
would you be able to do it at the 6 o'clock hour, like we originally planned this podcast?
I'll have to get back to you on that just because now that I don't have to be home for the podcast, I might go to dinner or something. I'm not sure.
All right, because I would have to save it for next week then, because that's something I definitely want to report on when you're on the show, because this is a huge story. And I would definitely like to have you and possibly maybe even other people on for this one, because this is something that definitely garners reaction. But just to give you guys my new story for now, it's something that has been going on for a little while. I haven't reported it here on the podcast, but since we're going straight into the SummerSlam Rewind, I figured this would be appropriate. Is that we would have WWE News with Randy Orton now expected to beat Brock Lesnar at SummerSlam. This report 5th, written by Joe Bergen of The Inquisitor. And it goes on to say, WWE superstar Randy Orton just got back to the WWE after missing several months of action due to a shoulder injury and surgery. Orton has been hampered with shoulder issues throughout his career, which is why another injury was terrible to see. Orton has been a main eventer for years, though, so his comeback to the WWE needed to be big. The Viper is giving us just that at his first pay-per-view opponent back will be Brock Lesnar. Obviously, it is a tall order for Orton to overcome the Beast Incarnate, especially knowing Lesnar has been dominant for so long. Lesnar does not lose very often, and when he does, he usually takes a low blow to do it. Randy Orton is crafty, and he has more experience in the business than Lesnar does. Both also came into the company at the same time, as both came out of the amazing OVW class that included Shelton Benjamin, John Cena, and Batista. Orton was considered a crown jewel. Considered a crown jewel by the WWE and was seen as a developmental project with loads of potential. he lived up to that and more over the last decade while Brock Lesnar was away from the company. The two never truly had a chance to work together while they were in the prime of their careers. Orton was on WWE Raw while Brock was on WWE SmackDown, of course. He also only worked for WWE for about 2 years before calling it quits. Lesnar would become a top name in the UFC for a few years while Orton remained at the top of the card in the WWE. Let's see. While Lesnar has faced off against some of the top names in the industry since his return, Randy Orton has not run into him. Match highly anticipated in years in the making. Therefore, seeing this main event at WWE SummerSlam makes total sense. Going into the event, it seemed obvious that Orton was going to Suplex City and would lose like most everyone else. However, this may not be the case. According to Cage Side Seats, Randy Orton is expected to beat Brock Lesnar at the SummerSlam event. This is pretty big, as it would be the Orton pay-per-view comeback, and having him lose would not be a good thing. However, against Lesnar, people could understand it. Being beaten by Brock does not really hurt a person standing in the WWE. He is the most legitimate athlete WWE has had in years due to his time in the UFC. However, his UFC work may hurt him this time around. It could be theorized that WWE is punishing Lesnar as best they can by having him take the loss to Orton, while Orton does need a big win to help him get back to the top. He can always face someone at WWE Backlash to accomplish this. However, WWE has to do something to show the locker room that they care about what occurred with Lesnar and will have him lose due to it. It is said that the WWE locker room is furious over the fact that part-time stars are not subject to being drug testing, which means the WWE wellness policy does not affect them. Lesnar is part-time, and therefore he has no need to be tested. The reason this is significant is because Lesnar failed two USDA drug tests before he fought Mark Hunt at UFC 200 back in July. When he passed all five that were released before the fight with Hunt took place, two of the three that came out after the fight showed a drug failure. He reportedly tested positive for an estrogen blocker. While not very useful for his fight, it would help him lean up and do better in training, as the blocker allows higher levels of testosterone due to the fact that he had to have only used it for a couple of weeks. It would not have counted as a PED as much as other things. Even if he used steroids for a couple weeks, it would not have done enough to his body to help him in his fight. He and Hunt were only a half pound off in weight for the fight. However, the substance he took was illegal and may also be illegal under WWE's wellness policy. Since Lesnar is not subject to it, he saw zero repercussions by the WWE over his failed USDA test. This made many fans upset, so it wouldn't make sense that WWE would have Orton beat Brock just to satisfy the boys and many WWE fans as well. It could be WWE's version of repercussion. The win also helps Randy Orton in the long run, too, as beating the Beast is no small task. It takes a lot to put him away, but Orton has proven that his RKO could strike at any time and could end the match. We can expect Orton to take a beating, but if he wins despite it, do not be surprised. That's a lot to take in. I mean, I feel that Brock Lesnar should win the match. There's no doubt about it. There's no way, no how. I don't care what the fuck Lesnar did. I don't care who the fuck the WWE is trying to satisfy. Reigns is winning this match. Randy Orton's not on Brock Lesnar's level. Randy Orton has no business beating the guy that beat the Undertaker streak. It's all just no, 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 no. Across the board for me, this is complete bullshit. Plus, the WWE doesn't have any testing for the part-timers. You know what? If the boys in the back and the WWE don't like it, instead of punishing Lesnar, make a rule and actually add it to your wellness policy that even part-timers have to be tested if you guys are so fucking worried about it. That's my opinion. Until you do that and get a rule instated in your policy, then Lesnar should not be punished regardless. I mean, is it right to punish him? Yeah, but if it's not in your rules, if you don't put it in your rules, regardless, if it's not there, then you should not be punished. Period. WWE needs to enforce that in their rules before doing anything else, in my opinion. And how do you feel about this, Sean? I don't know if we still have Sean with us here. Oh, I see his microphone's muted. So, anyway, that's how I feel about this. We'll get Sean's opinion when he comes back on. Just, yeah, you know, if WWE wants to punish Lesnar, then you gotta make this a rule for every part-timer that works for you, because what, only Lesnar's gonna be the one to face punishment because he happened to get caught by the USDA? What about all their other part-timers that don't get tested by the USDA, that they don't test, that could be taking all this shit? Look at The Rock. He's to high heaven with how big he's got. I'll tell you, the WWE, they just don't think. They don't think. This is another thing where they don't fucking think. And it's frustrating. Got a couple more news stories here. I got one more story before I look for the Raw and SmackDown ratings. I got news on Shelton Benjamin. We were all excited for Shelton Benjamin's big return to the WWE, but, you know, now you can put that on hold for a good long while. WWE News, big update on what WWE had planned for Shelton Benjamin before he was injured. This was from August 9, 2016, and on The Inquisitor, written by Joe Burgett. Former WWE superstar Shelton Benjamin was getting ready for his comeback to the WWE when it was found that he had a torn rotator cuff. This was horrible news to hear for the former WWE Intercontinental and United States Champion. He will now undergo surgery, and he will miss the next 4 to 6 months minimum. Seeing a guy get hurt is never a good thing, but Benjamin had not even made his official comeback. It appears he was working hurt, and WWE found out during testing that he had the injury. Shelton Benjamin had been working a lot of the independent scene, which is obviously where he first got hurt. It was sad to see him go down due to injury, as it seemed that WWE had some big plans in place for the former two-time WWE Tag Team Champion. According to Daily Wrestling News, WWE actually had some plans in place for Benjamin to get a high mid-card push upon his arrival to the SmackDown Live brand. Several people in management, including the people who count in WWE, which is the chairman Vince McMahon and the COO Triple H, were said to have always been high on Shelton when he was WWE due to his impressive work and excitement he brought to matches he was part of. There was a lot of buzz in the WWE due to his return, and the thought was that he would be an excellent addition to the WWE roster. Well, I also thought that as well. I would love to see Shelton Benjamin back in the ring, I gotta tell you. Now, the high mid-card push likely would have been seeing Shelton work towards the WWE Intercontinental Championship yet again. He has held the title three times before, and another reign surely would have come on your old grappler. Most feel that he would be able to fit in so many areas for the WWE. Having him was almost like a gift from God due to the needs WWE has with the brand split. In speaking, the tag team scene on WWE Raw seems to be doing well, but SmackDown Live needed a shot in the arm. American Alpha being added to the brand was the first step to making sure that tag team wrestling had some importance on the brand. Other teams like the Usos and Breezango. What's going on here?
We have phenomenal.
These damn pop-ups. All right, hold on. I got to go back in there. I hate when those pop-ups do that. All right. I don't know why they have pop-ups out of the blue and you can't just X them out. You got to leave the whole site, which doesn't make sense. Anyway, let's see. Let me get back to my spot. All right. Like we were talking about, SmackDown needed a shot in the arm. That's why American Alpha was added to the brand, making sure tag team wrestling had some importance on the brand. They added other teams like the Usos and Breezango to the roster as well. But American Alpha would have led the tag team division right off. It made sense due to their major popularity in WWE NXT. Now, there was some discussion of possibly bringing back Charlie Haas and having he and Benjamin team back up to recreate the world's greatest tag team. WWE wanted to have them take out American Alpha in a major program that fans would have drooled over. I was talking about that before this news even broke. Remember, you heard it here first. Now, considering it has been a dream match since the rise of American Alpha, WWE surely would have made some money on the rivalry. That, you know, we're talking about this now because that was exactly something that I had in mind and that I wanted to see. Now here we got more to the story. The world's greatest tag team would mostly be there to help with depth, but Shelton and Benjamin also were singles material for WWE as well. Again, the holes he would fill as great veteran are almost endless. This is why the injury to Shelton Benjamin was so significant for WWE. Most feel the WWE could easily go back. Plans they had before Shelton had to undergo surgery, which may be possible to work out for the best anyway. Shelton will have to miss at least 4 to 6 months with the recovery from the torn rotator cuff injury that puts his comeback very close to the Royal Rumble. He very well could return as a surprise Rumble entrant and have a nice return before being thrown out. Benjamin could then bring Charlie Haas soon after the tag team division with him on SmackDown Live. He and Charlie could then challenge American Alpha to a match at WrestleMania 33 in Orlando, Florida. This would allow for the dream match to occur on a huge stage, which likely would be better for the WWE than for it to happen too early. Plus, Shelton Benjamin, regardless of who wins in the rivalry, gets to be put in a highly discussed match. He could, of course, go into more of a singles role after this, but the tag team scene does need more depth. And SmackDown Live does have a marquee match to add to the WrestleMania 33 match card that will get people talking, and this certainly could do that. So that's big news. You heard me talk about that, you know, quite a bit on the show. And, you know, I have been talking about that for a while over the past couple weeks. Of American Alpha going up against the world's greatest tag team. That would be one of the most phenomenal tag team matches. I'm glad that the WWE has that in the books. and they're thinking about that. So a big kudos to the WWE on that one. And they need to make this happen. And yes, while no injuries are good, you know, the injuries suck all the way around, but this could end up being for the better so we could get that match at WrestleMania. Like the report said, and I think we have Sean back now. Sean, what do you think of the couple of stories that I've read?
Man, I'm having a bit of an issue here. Obviously the show is awesome, but I've been struggling to stay awake personally, just like, cause I just got done working all. I pretty much just fell asleep. But I did listen. I heard you cover Shelton Benjamin and, The Undertaker, not The Undertaker.
The Brock Lesnar match.
Yeah. Well, it was definitely good, and I just want to head right into SummerSlam Rewind, and for me, it doesn't get any better than Shawn Michaels versus Triple H Street Fight SummerSlam 02, the King of them all.
Now, is this favorite matches or favorite SummerSlams? Because I don't know how this is working 100%.
Yeah, man, it's whatever you want it to be.
Okay. Well, definitely according to matches, if I had to pick a greatest match, it'd be exactly that, because I was never so pumped up for a SummerSlam match. Michael's return. Yeah, honestly, I was upset that got co-main event over The Rock and Brock. I feel that match and Shawn Michaels' return was way bigger than The Rock and Brock Lesnar could ever be. It really is. And, you know, why The Rock and Brock Lesnar got top billing over that, I stand. Because that street fight was absolutely iconic. It was probably one of the best street fights that we've ever seen. But I mean, as far as SummerSlam goes, just the anticipation to see HBK back in the ring again and, you know, come back. And we were all wondering, how would he perform? You know, what would happen with Shawn Michaels? Would he still have the same, you know, would he have a loss in his step? Would he pick up right where he left off? And Shawn Michaels did what Shawn Michaels always did, and that was pick up right where he left off and gave us a match of a lifetime there. And, you know, I love that.
It was far superior to any of his prior work.
He really went out there and proved himself in a big way. He really did. Like, you could tell when Shawn Michaels wrestled in that match that he didn't want to be what he was when he left. He wanted to be better. And you really did hit that on the head, Sean. He was better. He showed that he belonged after that horrible back injury, that he still belonged, you know, at the top of the card. It was unbelievable. It was absolutely unbelievable. That was one of my fondest moments, and definitely, I believe, the greatest match that happened on SummerSlam. No doubt. Moving on to favorite SummerSlams, what if we go top three SummerSlams have on your list there?
Go for it.
if I had to pick, hard. All these are really hard. You know, if I think about it, you gotta treat them all with such care. Honestly, at number, wow. At E, you have to pick. Wow. This is really getting me on the spot. Number three, I would probably have to pick. I'm 2002. For number three. And let me see if I could find, I want to find the match card for it so I can read it for you guys as well. SummerSlam 2002, and the reason why it's number three on my list. Let's see. SummerSlam 2002. Let's see what we come up with.
Yo, sorry about that before, but what happened was I had to go up to my room where my laptop charger was, and I was plugged in, and, you know, I just had the freaking air on, and, like, I just, you know, I'm like, oh, I'll lay down for a couple minutes, and bad choice. But luckily, I woke up. I was worried. I'm like, oh, shit, what if I fall asleep and I don't wake up?
Hey, man, you know, you're okay. Actually, you just got, you got done, you know, you got back down right when I finished up.
So you're, I mean, I just wanted to, you know, really cover the top, you know, our favorite SummerSlam match and our favorite SummerSlam. I don't, you know, I don't think we really have enough time right now to cover, you know, six different SummerSlams, so.
Well, then should we just postpone the SummerSlam Rewind?
No, we're in the middle of it.
Or, like, make a part two?
Yeah.
Because,
I mean, I already have my favorite SummerSlam of all time. I'm sure you have yours, and that's, you know, what people most want to hear.
Oh, I definitely have mine. The reason why I did top three is because that's what we were talking about prior.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, our favorite, it's pretty cool that we both have the favorite match, you know, like the favorite classic match. But, I'm definitely interested in knowing what's your favorite all around SummerSlam.
Well, of course it's going to be, it's torn between two here. Because they both
gotta pick one.
They both mean a great deal to me, but I think I know where my number one SummerSlam is gonna come in at. I mean, without a doubt. My number one SummerSlam, I'll tell you, my number two is the 1998 SummerSlam with Stone Cold Steve Austin and The Undertaker is the main event. But my number one SummerSlam indeed has to be SummerSlam 97. There's absolutely no doubt. I mean, listen to these seven matches that were on the card that night for SummerSlam. And these were like seven of the best SummerSlam matches, you know, that you could get. I mean, we kicked off the night in a steel cage match. Mankind defeated Hunter Hearst Helmsley with China. So Mankind, Mick Foley, and Triple H in the old school blue barred steel cage. It was 16 minutes and 13 seconds. Then in match number two, we went with Goldust going up against Brian Pillman. Of course, Goldust had Marlena in his corner, and the stipulation was that if Brian Pillman lost, he had to wear a dress until he won another match. Well, Brian Pillman, Goldust beat Brian Pillman. Brian Pillman had to wear a dress that was 7 minutes and 17 seconds. Then, third match, the Legion of Doom, Hawk and Animal, going up against the Godwins, Henry and Phineas Godwin. The Legion of Doom ended up getting the win in a tag team match at 9 minutes and 15 seconds. Match number 4, the British Bulldog versus Ken Shamrock, singles match for the European Championship. The British Bulldog defeated Ken Shamrock via disqualification. Then, we move on to an 8-man tag team match. We had Los Barriquas, Savio Vega, Miguel Perez Jr., Jose Estrada Jr., and Jesus Castillo defeated the Disciples of Apocalypse, consisting of Crush, Chains, 8-Ball, and Skull. Then in match number 6, which is one of the most, memorable matches. Number 6, we have Stone Cold Steve Austin going up against Owen Hart for the Intercontinental Championship in a singles match. And by the way, the Legion of Doom match was 9 minutes 15 seconds. British Bulldog match was 7 minutes 29 seconds. The 8-man tag was 9 minutes 8 seconds. And this Intercontinental title match was 16 minutes and 16 seconds. This was the famous match, Intercontinental title match, where Stone Cold got dropped on his head by Owen Hart in a pile driver, broke his neck, was laid out in the middle of the ring. Owen Hart had to try to, sell what was happening. Walk around the ring for a while until Austin could get his wits about him to roll up Owen Hart in one of the worst looking roll-ups to get the victory. And Stone Cold walked out with the Intercontinental Championship. And definitely in one of the greatest SummerSlam main events of all time here. WWE Championship match between the challenger against the champion, The Undertaker. Shawn Michaels is the special guest referee, and the rules to this match were if Bret Hart loses, then he can never wrestle on American soil again. And for Shawn Michaels, that if he would be unfair towards Bret Hart, not be allowed to wrestle in the WWE again. So, this match went, like I said, the Intercontinental title match went 16 minutes, 16 seconds. This match went 28 minutes and 19 seconds. In the end, The Undertaker ended up, Bret Hart ended up defeating The Undertaker to win the WWE title for the fifth and final time of his career, because Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels got in a little bit of a fight. Bret Hart spit in the face of Shawn Michaels. Shawn Michaels went to swing the chair at Bret Hart, ended up hitting The Undertaker in the head. Bret Hart got the cover. Shawn Michaels had to count to 3. This leading to Shawn Michaels' heel turn with the big rivalry with The Undertaker, starting DX, all that good stuff. This was pretty much, to me, like almost the start of the Attitude Era, like where everything really picked up, so to speak, if you talk about a full event. And this was in the old Izod Center, the Continental Airlines Arena in East Rutherford, New Jersey, on August 3rd, 1997. The attendance for this event was 20,213 in just a regular arena. When will you see crowds that big nowadays in a regular arena?
Definitely.
But there you go. So, now that we went through all that, Sean, where's your favorites lie?
Man, if you asked me a year ago, I would be right on the same page with you. But it just so happens that my favorite SummerSlam happened less than a year ago. That's right. SummerSlam 2015 is my number one SummerSlam of all time. It was SummerSlam 2015, live from the Barclays Center in Brooklyn, New York, where we had Sheamus defeat Randy Orton. I know, off to a bad start, but it gets better. It manages to still be the best SummerSlam despite that. So, how is that possible? Let me explain. The New Day, Big E, Kofi, and Xavier Woods defeated primetime players Darren Young and Titus O'Neil to win the championships. So this is when the New Day started their championship reign. They also defeated the Lucha Dragons and Los Matadores. Dolph Ziggler with Lana defeated Rusev with Summer Rae in a double countout singles match. Well, that ended in a double countout, no winner. And then we had Stephen Amell and Neville defeat Stardust and King Barrett, two men who are no longer with the company. And speaking of no longer with the company, Ryback was the IC champion and defeated The Big Show and Miz. So with all that shit out of the way, we finally made room for the good stuff. We had Roman Reigns and Dean Ambrose defeat the Wyatt family, Bray and Luke. Team PCB, Paige, Charlotte, and Becky Lynch defeated Team Bella, Nikki, Brie, and Alicia versus Team Bad, Sasha, Naomi, and Tamina. Kevin Owens defeated Cesaro in one hell of a match and probably Cesaro's greatest match of his career. And who could forget The Undertaker defeating Brock Lesnar via Hell's Gate with Brock Lesnar delivering the infamous bird along with Paul Heyman by submission in 17 minutes and 50 seconds. But that's not what made it the best of all time. What made it the best of all time? Big T, I'm sure you know what I'm talking about. Seth Rollins, the WWE World Heavyweight Champion, defeated John Cena, the U.S. Champion, in order to become a dual champion. That's right. Seth Rollins retained his world champion and gained John Cena's U.S. Championship, ending the John Cena Open Challenge BS and delivering an era of pure excellence for a month. Yes, that's right. It only lasted a month, but what an amazing month September through August was when Seth Rollins defeated John Cena for the U.S. Championship in a singles match for both WWE World Heavyweight Championship and the WWE United States Championship in a match that lasted 19 minutes and 44 seconds. Pure perfection in Brooklyn, New York.
Well, I can definitely understand why you enjoyed that. I mean, for me, even though I love Seth Rollins, I don't love him as much as I love John Cena. And that was a very upsetting time for me because I wanted John Cena to tie Ric Flair and go on to break Ric Flair's record because I'm tired of hearing, oh, Ric Flair's a 16-time world champ, Ric Flair this, Ric Flair that. It's like, that's Ric Flair's only claim to fame, it seems. It's time for that to go down, and time for John Cena to be at the top of that list.
Only claim?
How relevant Ric Flair is.
Only claim to fame, I mean.
Not in my opinion, I'm saying according to the WWE, because that's all they meant.
I mean, the way you're labeling that is very, I know, like, not you're labeling it, but if people say that, it's like, wait, that's the best claim to fame there is in wrestling.
It's the best, but they make it sound like that's the only thing that Ric Flair's about. And every time Ric Flair's on, we always hear, well, the 16-time world champion, the 16-time this and that. And it's like I'm tired of it. I want someone else to hold that crown. Because, all right, here's a reason. was a 16-time world champ. But the funny thing is, he only won the title twice in the WWE. He was a 14-time champ in the NWA and WCW. And, you know, now the WWE is the only company standing, and they have to acknowledge basically a wrestler that has all those titles that hardly even wrestled in their fucking company. It's like WWE, John Cena never wrestled anywhere else. He never bounced back and forth. He's been with one company since he started, and I know that's where he'll finish. He ain't gonna go on to TNA or anywhere else. Because that's not what it does. And I feel that if you're gonna hold wrestling's most prestigious record like that, it should be a man that's actually wrestled for the company, that never left the company, that never wrestled for a rival company, that has been there since day one, and has probably contributed out of almost any superstar to ever get in the ring and donate to all the charities that he's donated to and do all the outstanding work for communities that he does, do all these outstanding things for kids, especially for the Make-A-Wish kids. You know, like I already know, because believe me, I go to WrestleMania weekend the past 6 years in a row, and John Cena, I always read the stories how he pays for like 200 children and their families and all expenses paid in their hotels, everything that they buy as far as, you know, if they go out to dinner, whatever merchandise they buy, and all their tickets. John Cena pays for them all and takes care of them. And that's, you know what, that's a stand-up thing to do. John Cena is just incredible as far as what he does in and out of the business. And I feel a man that should be marketed with wrestling's greatest honor should be a man of character and integrity, not a man that has, you know, basically had so many problems along the way. And, you know, it's highlighted. Like, that's the reason why Jim Ross got fired, because he had to basically babysit a drunken Ric Flair WWE, what, 2K13 launch thing or whatever it was. And I mean, you know, that's, you know, Ric Flair, he definitely has his demons. Is Ric Flair a nice guy? Yes. Back in the day, though, in the 80s and stuff when he was in his prime, it seemed to me that he kind of let his character become him. And I think he kind of lost sight of himself. When John Cena, always remembered where he came from, he never lost sight of himself. He always had his head on, always busted his ass, gave 110%. I just feel that a man like John Cena deserves that honor. And it really pains me that WWE just like all of a sudden pulled the plug on all of his momentum and all of his pushes. I feel that they could have at least gave him a couple more title reigns, you know, before, and let him break the record before just pulling the rug completely out from underneath him. And it upsets me every time I see John Cena get in the ring. You know I could take a lot of heat for this, but honestly, I don't really even care anymore. I mean, I've held this in now for a while. And it really does make me mad. And it all started at SummerSlam of last year when Cena's push was just generally going down.
Yeah, but I mean, because he regained the championship at Night of Champions, and then he decided to do American Grit. That was his decision.
I know that was his decision, but like, he regained the U.S. championship. It's like, I want to see him with that world championship.
Yeah, but I mean, Seth Rollins won it fair and square.
He did. Well, at SummerSlam, no, he didn't. Jon Stewart came out and screwed John Cena.
Well, no one likes Jon Stewart.
I was gonna say, that's one of the reasons why I really hate Jon Stewart. Especially, I didn't like him before.
Well, Seth Rollins didn't ask him to do that.
Well, no, Seth Rollins didn't ask him to do it, no. But, Jon Stewart, that fucking douche, had to go down there and stick his nose in the match, and basically ruin it and give it a questionable ending.
I pretend like that didn't even happen.
I'm glad you do, because for those of us, man, that actually remember it, believe me, it's one of the worst things that you can, you know, even think about. Jon Stewart coming out with that horrible chair shot, laying it down right in the center of the ring for Rollins, like, oh, pedigree him. Like, when Cena gave Stewart AA the next night on Raw and laid his ass out, I couldn't be fucking happier. And I have to see Jon Stewart again. And if we do have to see him again, stick him in the ring with Brock Lesnar. Let Brock Lesnar suplex him about 20 times. And then F5 his ass. That would be the next Jon Stewart appearance that I would love to see. I mean, I definitely get where, I understand why, Sean, it was your favorite SummerSlam. Because if Jericho had a moment like that, that would be my favorite SummerSlam as well. So I definitely get it. It's just, it left a lot of hard feelings.
Well, let me tell you this. I think in 2 weeks, if you ask me what my favorite SummerSlam will be, it'll be 2016. Because Seth Rollins will become the first ever Universal Champion. So, I'm really anticipating this SummerSlam for pretty much that much and that match alone.
Well, I will say, to me, there's no doubt that Seth Rollins is going to win the title and become the first ever Universal Champion, because there's no way a man that has only appeared on WWE TV basically twice and wrestled in 2 matches, and he's going to get the title right out of the gate like that against the number one overall draft pick yet for both shows, the number one overall draft pick, and Seth Rollins, Balor's not getting it. He's not. There's no way. It's going to be a great match, but there's no way.
We're definitely going to be getting ready for SummerSlam coming up on next week's show. It'll be our prediction show, I do believe.
Yeah, next week is the SummerSlam prediction show. I also want to do, because this is like NXT's WrestleMania pretty much, I would like to do NXT TakeOver Brooklyn predictions as well. Because we got huge matches with Samoa Joe and Shinsuke Nakamura for the title, and Bayley and Asuka, and so much good stuff. I mean, that's going to be one of the biggest NXT shows of all time. That is like really hitting high.
All right, man. Well, it's that time of the week where we are going to go back in the time machine and present to our viewers this day in WWE wrestling history. Well, where should I start here?
Well, we started the show August 10th, and now we're in August 11th.
Yeah, so I'm going to stick with August 10th. And just real quick, August 10th, 20 years ago, 1996, Hulk Hogan, Hollywood Hogan, defeated the Giant to win the WCW World Heavyweight Champion post-match, the infamous Hogan sprayed the WCW world title belt, and also Ed Leslie, then the Booty Man, tried to join the New World Order but was rejected and assaulted by the NWO. It would be Leslie's final appearance for the company until he returned in February 98 as the Disciple. So who could forget Hogan spray painting NWO on the World Heavyweight Championship for the first time? But we have a bit of a WWE Network mystery that happened 14 14 years ago today, WWE presented Global Warming from Colonial Stadium in Melbourne, Australia. The event was a featured show on the WWE's first tour of the country since 1986. 56,734 people were in attendance, a truly incredible event. The event, available exclusively on pay-per-view audiences in Australia at the time of the event, was commercially released on VHS and DVD in November of that year. Rikishi defeated Rico in a Kiss My Ass match. Mark Henry and Randy Orton defeated D-Von and Batista. Jamie Noble defeated Hurricane Helms to retain the WWE Cruiserweight Championship. Chavo Guerrero and Hardcore Holly defeated Billy and Chuck. Kurt Angle defeated Test. Lance Storm and Christian defeated Billy Kidman and Rey Mysterio to retain the WWE Tag Team Championships. Edge defeated Chris Jericho. Torrie Wilson defeated Stacy Keibler in a bra and panties match. And one of the most incredible main events of all times that I have never seen, The Rock defeated Triple H and Brock Lesnar in a triple threat to retain the WWE Championship. And that is this day in WWE history.
Hey, Sean, do you have, maybe a small story or a small thing on this day in wrestling history you can do for about 2 or 3 minutes? I have a little bit of an emergency.
Yep.
Okay.
Well, 18 years ago today, on Raw is War from Omaha, Nebraska, Kane and Mankind defeated Stone Cold Steve Austin and The Undertaker, The Nation, The Rock, and D'Lo Brown, and the New Age Outlaws in Four Corners match to win the WWF Tag Team Championships. This was the first multi-team tag title match to be contested under the Outlaw Rule, a rule that introduced following the New Age Outlaws pinning one another in a similar match 2 months earlier. This episode is best remembered for a cameo appearance by John Wayne Bobbitt, a man who made international news for having his penis cut off by his then wife, Lorena, in 1993. Thirteen years ago today in Des Moines, Iowa, Christian defeated Booker T to win the WWE Intercontinental Championship. The title change was never televised. The emergency title change was made as Booker T was suffering a back injury and needed time off.
Talk everyone through that. We're going to making some chicken nuggets.
Thanks for giving us those couple extras there.
Yep.
Well, yeah, definitely. I remember show back in 2002, and what a match that was, Sean. Really, the triple threat match with The Rock, Brock Lesnar, and Triple H was one of the best. And all those moments on Raw, definitely some great stuff. And, you know, a lot of rich wrestling history. And, you know, I'm just happy to have been able to witness all of it. I don't know if you ever got to witness global warming, but how I ended up witnessing it was I bought the VHS tape of it.
Wow.
And that's how I ended up getting it. Like, I bought the VHS tape in 2002, right when it got released. I bought it at FYE, and I watched that show. It was so good. Like, I remember you reading the Jericho Edge match, and the Jericho Edge match was, like, a really great one there. They had some good ones. They definitely had, you know, just incredible, incredible memories. And it's like every week when we go back in time and we relive all that, it makes me feel good. You know, like, I just miss those times so much. And those times mean more to me, Sean, than probably anything else, because those are like, you know, my teenage year, like my childhood / teenage years. And it's just, you know, some incredible times that I will never ever forget. And honestly, I will always cherish it in my life. There's no doubt about that. I mean,
oh yeah.
Attitude Era and Ruthless Aggression Era, man, those are like my babies there, I gotta say. And I miss it, bro. I really do. I miss it. And I hope one day, you know, like we talked on Ringside Talk on Sunday, and you know what? I'll have to put the link for that video in the description as well, because we had a great conversation. And, you know, like Sean hit the nail on the head about how Vince McMahon basically had to give in to, you know, to all the people and, you know, all of the shareholders and all this and all that. And, you know, it's a shame. It's a shame that Vince had to give in the way he did and basically take away from us all of the greatest moments that we very much love and appreciate. And, you know, I don't mean to get choked up, but it's like one of those things, you know, makes you go back and think, and it's like, why? You know, why did Vince McMahon really have to cave in and just almost throw it all away when we had such great memories like that? And I know I'm probably getting too far ahead of myself, people, but honestly, I just can't help it. I have so much passion for this business that I can't even relay it into words for you guys. I love it. When I say I love this business, when I say that I love it, when I say it means a lot to me, you can bet your bottom dollar that it damn sure does. Wrestling is one of the most important things that, you know, I've ever had in my life. But, you know, besides family and friends, then wrestling is number three. And, you know, look at all the great things that wrestling has given me in my life. Look, if it wasn't for wrestling, me and Sean wouldn't be here doing this podcast for you guys right now. Right now as we speak and right now as we breathe. It's all because of that. And it's just, wrestling is just an incredible, incredible, incredible sport. And I hope people can appreciate it and love it as much as I do. And, You got any words on that, Sean, as to what wrestling means to you?
I'm pulling my chicken out here.
All right. Late night chicken nuggets. Man, I'll tell you one thing. I love to have little late night snacks myself, so I know exactly where Sean's coming from on this aspect. We're all guilty of the late night snack attack. But it's just, the feeling of nostalgia, the feeling of greatness, the feeling of the old time Raws and SmackDown and pay-per-views and old episodes of Velocity and Sunday Night Heat, that just mean a great deal. A really, really great deal. And I really hope that, everybody can appreciate it as much as I do, because it's definitely an incredible thing. You still pulling those chicken nuggets out, bud?
Yeah, I was wondering if you could guess. Who has more shares of WWE? Stephanie Levesque or Michelle Wilson?
Wow. I would have to say probably Michelle Wilson, because Stephanie has been selling all her stock.
Yep, Michelle has 371,000. And Stephanie has 92,000.
Well,
who even knows who she is?
As she's one of the higher ups, I think that works close to Vince. I just checked out my Twitter right now. And how ironically, because we're nearing the end where we always have Mr. EC3's intro close out everything. And if I put up the pictures, Sean, if you go on my Twitter, of I put up a few pictures of me and EC3 last couple meetups that we had. And let me see. Okay, let's see.
Yep, I see it. He liked it.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out how to blow that up on my PC to show that he liked it. What am I doing wrong here? How do I highlight it to show that someone liked it? I know I sound stupid right now.
You just click on the Twitter link itself and zoom in.
The Twitter link. Let's see. Where would the Twitter link be?
Here, I could share it.
Okay. Could see it. Whenever you're ready to screen share, let me know.
All right, you guys see this? Here's Big T's Twitter page, Beyond the Ring with Big T. He just posted me with Ethan Carter III, TNA, at Air Wrestling in June and July of 2016. You are the best, EC3. Here are the pictures. There it is. Broskies. But as if that wasn't enough, we go down to the likes page, and we have our buddy Drew Wolfman. Oh. Drew Wolfman liked it, and look who, oh, shit. Fucking zoom in. EC3 liked it as well. There you have it. EC3. Shout out, buddy. So there you have it, man. Yo, your mic's not on. You muted yourself.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I muted that because I didn't want any background sound to, you know, interrupt it to where it would not show the screen share. But yeah, definitely this is awesome. And AIW even retweeted it. I mean, liked it too.
Awesome.
So definitely some awesome, awesome stuff. EC3, you know, we love you here on the show, buddy. You're one of our favorites. You want to promote your Twitter, Sean, real quick? I'll mute my mic so that way yours could get on and promote
your Twitter. I'm good.
Okay, because I was going to say, if you want to promote your Twitter and get everybody here familiar and follow you, that's fine.
Sean09009, hit me up.
Yep, we got the best co-host here. And I'll tell you, EC3 liking that tweet, man, was something else. Will EC3 make it a Instagram profile pic?
Been there, done that.
Yep, that happened actually before Christmas last year. So hopefully one of these days, man, EC3 will be here along with us and he will be giving wrestling, you know, stories and all that stuff to all you guys here on the podcast one day. I really hope so. I see that you're still going through my Twitter.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's AIW Wrestling's Twitter. They liked it. And you liked it, and True Wolfman liked it. But for any of you guys that love indie wrestling, AIW is some of the absolute best. Period. It just is. It really is. Sean still has the screen share on Twitter. Are you on Seth Rollins' Twitter?
Yeah.
Because I've seen that. That's awesome, man. Oh. This is an incredible night, even though I had to step away for a couple minutes, you know, for an emergency, and, you know, you had to step away for a little bit earlier. I mean, you know, all is well, though. It came together. We had a great show.
This is pretty interesting. Seth Rollins only ever liked one thing on Twitter, and he liked something that Finn Balor posted. Called the Equality Club, standing up for gay rights to be equal here in the United States. And pretty cool that that's the one thing Seth Rollins liked in his history here on Twitter. But how ironic is it, you know, it's going to be a SummerSlam opponent, and that only happened June 18th.
Yeah, was that like right after the Orlando tragedy?
Probably.
That's awesome that, you know, Seth Rollins did that and put that like out there on Twitter since he, you know, doesn't like too many things too often, obviously, you know, as we can tell, only liking one thing, but it's definitely an important thing nonetheless.
Yep.
But we hammered it out of the park, man, again. And I hope that the audio issues weren't as bad on my end this week with using this different mic. You know, in the beginning, just a little bit of stuff with your mic was going on, but we seemed to fix it rather quickly. So I think...
It was weird. I mean, I've used that mic. I don't understand it.
I think we got things definitely settled pretty quick, though, tonight.
Yeah.
When there was problems, we got it fixed. Didn't really have to suffer with them for that long, so I think we did a big step up with that when it comes to fixing problems should they arise. We stayed solid throughout the show. And, you know, I hope that you can come on when we do that breaking news story about The Undertaker. That is, I read the story, just like I read the headline tonight. I read the story, and that is definitely a very important story. And, you know, like we said, we were going fast paced tonight. Since we're doing that, you know, it wasn't worth really getting into that. Because I figured that story is going to be about at least worth a half hour to talk on about it because it's big.
All right, man.
I hope that, you know, we'll get to do that eventually. We'll see how the weekend goes. It'd be Saturday, Sunday, or even Monday before Raw, or even Tuesday before SmackDown, something. Because I want to try to do it before the next podcast, because I feel that if we put that into the podcast next week, then we're going to have pretty much a 3-hour podcast. So that's why I want to give the Undertaker story its own little stream, because it's a big deal. Anything with the Undertaker is a big deal. But I will tell you, just for a little teaser to this story, and Sean, I'm going to talk to you about it off the air when we get off the air. But just to give the people a little teaser of this story, I'm going to tell you guys that reportedly what Undertaker has told the WWE, if the rumor is true, we pretty much have a clear cut. We do, if this rumor is true, we have a clear cut answer where, or how long I should say, the Undertaker's career is going to go on if he comes back. So, I mean, this story has big implications on it. It has huge things, you know, with it. Sean, do you know you're still on screen share?
Yeah.
All right, I just wanted to make sure, just in case. But,
I'm just going through EC3's likes. You're the most recent.
Awesome.
Apparently, EC3 is a big Trump supporter.
Another thing we have in common.
Yep.
EC3 is one of the best, man. He's just great. EC3 is great. But, yeah, you know, so stay tuned on when we can do a video about Undertaker, because this is going to be huge. I know once I tell Sean things about it when we get off the air, I think Sean's even going to be a little bit surprised. But I'm not spoiling it for anybody here. So no spoilers, people. I will break it to you when we're on the air doing a show, you know, ourselves. And we're going to talk all about it. So I guess, Sean, do you have any closing words for this week?
Nope. Except.
All right.
Thanks again for having me, and sorry for being the sleepiest co-host on earth. It's just working hard does that to you, but we all know how that is. So, man, we just keep on trucking and keep on having fun, and I'm enjoying every minute of it.
I'm happy to hear that, buddy. Well, with that being said, I know next week we're going to do the podcast. I'm sure you probably don't have any idea yet whether it'd be Tuesday, Wednesday. Yeah, do you know? Or not quite yet, basically.
Yeah.
All right. Well, then we'll see how it goes. Once I find out when we're going to do the podcast next week, I'll update you guys. And, you know, once we get the video together for the Undertaker thing, the big news that's going around, I'll try to let you know when we're going to go live and do that. And, you know, we'll see how it goes. We'll see how it goes into the weekend. But this has been episode number 12 of the Beyond the Ring with Big T Wrestling Podcast. And Sean, I guess it comes to about that time to, where I should ask you, what time is it for right now?
EC3.
Yes, sir. We're going to kick it off. We'll end the show, I should say, with Mr. EC3 closing us out and sending us off into the sunset. And then, Sean, you know, stay with me. Like I said, I'll probably switch over on my mobile so that way I can move around. But I want to tell you about this Undertaker thing, a few things that I read, because this is some real important stuff. Anyway, thank you for tuning into the episode this week, guys. And we'll be back next week with the podcast. Like I said, subscribe to the podcast. Leave a 5-star rating. Also, subscribe to my channel on YouTube. If you want to follow me on YouTube, all that good stuff, check out my website, www.beyondtheringwithbigt.com. And also, make absolutely sure that you subscribe, leave a 5-star rating on the podcast, Podomatic iTunes, subscribe to YouTube. All this is free. It doesn't cost you a dime. It's all absolutely free.
Free.
Is that how Stephanie's going to look on 2K17?
Yep.
Definitely not bad. That'll be my favorite women's superstar. I'll have to play as her every time online and face you and try to win, I guess. Let's see. You could be Charlotte. I'll have fun whooping up on you with Stephanie.
There you go.
Or be Eva Marie. Eva Marie or Charlotte, any one of them. But, yeah, that's about it. We've been having a ton of fun. And I'm just thinking about, you know, this whole Undertaker thing because the story really threw me for a loop today. And I probably should have known about it maybe a little sooner, but it just crossed my eye today. And, wow, damn good stuff. So, well, had a good night to close it with EC3, liking the tweet. Thank you, EC3. Joe, brother, and hopefully I get to meet up with him again soon. And, Sean, what are you doing?
What?
I see your screen share just frozen on that picture.
I'm not doing nothing.
That should be your photo every time you come on next time. I'll put a poll up for everybody to vote on Twitter. If you want this to be Sean's photo every week when he's coming on talking, leave your vote.
Okay.
But but anyway, we're going to have EC3 send us off into the sunset. Sean, you could mute your mic so that way I could play the EC3 ending clip for us here. And Sean, I've been Big T. This has been episode 12 of the Beyond the Ring with Big T Wrestling Podcast. And like I said, we'll be back next week on the podcast. And you'll see us on YouTube maybe over the weekend or Monday and Tuesday night after Raw and SmackDown. We'll play it by ear and see how it goes. So leave those subscribes. Thank you, 3, for leaving those likes on Twitter. And thank you for everything that you've done for the show and for this fantastic intro and outro for the show that you made that we're about to play right now. Thank you very much, EC3. You're awesome, man. But that's going to do it for me, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to close it out right here, right now. Let's get the screen share going. Let's see. I just got to get my screen share going to where... I got to see if this is working. All right, let me see now. Screen share. There it is. All right, we're going to see it right now, people. Here it is. We're going out in the sunset. Until next week, take care, everybody. Thank you very much for watching and listening. Next week on the podcast, be safe. Have a great rest of your week and have a great weekend. And we'll be back for SummerSlam predictions, NXT predictions, all that good stuff next week on the podcast. More juicy news and rumors and gossip that you're not going to want to miss. So make sure that you tune in for all that. We will see you next week on the podcast. We'll see you on YouTube probably over the weekend and maybe even Monday and Tuesday. So until then, 12, and we'll see you next week. Be safe and good night, everybody. Here is EC3. Boom. Enjoy, ladies and gentlemen. The former two-time TNA World Heavyweight Champion and the number one contender for the TNA World Heavyweight Championship at Bound for Glory, it is Mr. EC3 sending us on home. Good night, everybody.
Well, this is EC3 of TNA Wrestling, and you are so very fortunate because you are watching Beyond the Ring with Big T.